A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
The phrase, if you aren't pain, you're the product, has been a tech cliche for years now. But the actual machinery behind it's stranger and more systematic than most people realize, and Daniel's been thinking about exactly that. He sent in a whole thing about data brokering. Why it feels like a conspiracy theory even though it isn't one. Whether that you're the product saying actually holds up, why even paying customers might still be getting treated as product, and the specific mechanisms by which mundane everyday information gets monetized through this shadowy intermediary layer. And then the question he really wants answered, how do the data collectors and the data buyers actually meet up and complete a transaction? Because without that marketplace, none of this works.
Right. That's the part most coverage skips. Everyone talks about data being collected, but the actual handoff, the moment money changes hands for your profile, that's a black box to most people. And it shouldn't be, because it's not secret. It's just fast.
So today we're going to follow the money. From your phone sensors all the way to the auction block where your attention gets sold and the time it takes to blink.
Let's define what we're actually talking about first. Data brokering is the industry of collecting, aggregating, and reselling personal information. And I don't just mean your name and email address. I mean your location history, your shopping habits, what you've searched about health conditions, your political leanings, whether you've recently been in a car accident, whether you're pregnant, whether you're trying to lose weight. There are firms whose entire business is knowing things about you that you didn't tell them.
And that's why it has that conspiratorial ring. There's no app you download called Sell My Data. There's no terms of service you click agree on. There's no single company you can point to and say, that's the one. It's a web of hundreds of firms most people have never heard of. Axiom, Experian's marketing division, Oracle's data cloud, LiveRamp, dozens more. All trading in data that nobody remembers knowingly giving up.
The scale is genuinely hard to wrap your head around. Estimates put the global data broker industry in the hundreds of billions of dollars. Some analyses peg it north of $300 billion, and it operates almost entirely outside public awareness. That's not an accident. The industry has no reason to advertise itself to the people whose data it trades. The customers are advertisers, not you.
So Daniel's instinct is right. It feels like a conspiracy theory. But here's the thing. It's not a conspiracy. It's a market, and markets need infrastructure. They need a way for buyers and sellers to find each other, agree on a price, and complete a transaction. That infrastructure exists. It's automated, and it runs in milliseconds.
So now that we know what the industry is, let's talk about how your phone becomes a surveillance device without you noticing.
Start with collection. What's actually being harvested?
Everything that can be. Location pings from apps are the big one. Your weather app knows where you're every time it checks the forecast. Your fitness app tracks your running routes. Your maps app knows where you drive, where you stop, how long you stay. Retail apps track which stores you walk into. All of this gets packaged and sold.
And it's not just apps. Loyalty cards at grocery stores. They're not giving you a discount out of generosity. They're building a purchase history. They can sell. Browser cookies and fingerprinting track every site you visit. Even offline data gets digitized and merged in property records, magazine subscriptions, voter registration, warranty cards you mailed in 10 years ago.
The voter registration one is interesting because it's public record. Anyone can get it. Data brokers scrape it, digitize it, and suddenly your party affiliation is sitting in a profile next to your shopping habits. There's no opting out of public records.
So the collection is broad and largely invisible, but that's not the part that creeps people out. The creepiness comes from aggregation.
This is where it gets impressive in a technical sense, and also unsettling. Data brokers don't just collect fragments, they merge them. They take your location pings from one app, your purchase history from a loyalty card, your browsing behavior from cookies, and they stitch it all into a single profile. The technical term is probabilistic matching.
Walk me through how that matching works.
The simplest version is deterministic. If two datasets both have your email address, you just join on that field. Done. But a lot of data comes in without a clean identifier. Maybe one dataset has a device ID, another has a hashed email, a third has nothing but behavioral patterns. Probabilistic matching uses statistical models to say these three fragments probably belong to the same person. They look at things like IP address ranges, time of day patterns, location overlaps. If a device that visited this coffee shop every morning also shows up at this home address every night, and the purchase history at the coffee shop matches the credit card linked to that address, the model starts connecting dots.
So a broker ends up knowing things about you that no single app ever knew.
The fitness app knows your running route. The grocery store knows you buy a lot of vegetables. The weather app knows you're in a particular city. None of them individually knows you're a health-conscious person in Chicago who runs 3 times a week and shops at Whole Foods. But the broker who buys all 3 datasets and merges them, they know that. They build a profile and tag you with audience segments.
Which brings us to Daniel's question about the "you're the product" saying. Does it hold up?
It holds up better than most cliches do. For free services, it's literally true. The payment is your attention and your data. You get Gmail, Google gets to show you ads based on everything you've ever emailed about. That's the deal. But the deeper truth, and this is what Daniel's really getting at, is that even paid services often still monetize data on the side.
Why? If I'm already paying you, why double dip?
Because the marginal revenue from selling data often exceeds the subscription fee. If you're paying $10 a month for a service, but the data you generate is worth $12 a month on the broker market, the company has a financial incentive to collect and sell regardless of your subscription. And the broker market is so lucrative that this math works out more often than you'd think.
And the companies are careful about the language they use to describe this.
Incredibly careful. "We don't sell your data" is a line you see everywhere. And it's often technically true. They don't sell it, they license it. Or they share it with partners. Or they make it available through APIs. Or they contribute it to a data cooperative where everyone pools their data and draws from the common pool. The semantics matter enormously in this industry because "sell" has a specific legal meaning in privacy regulations, and companies have built their entire data sharing architecture around avoiding that word.
So paying doesn't exempt you. Paid apps still collect telemetry, still have analytics partners, still have data sharing agreements buried in privacy policies that nobody reads. The "we don't sell your data" promise is a carefully constructed legal position, not a description of what actually happens to your information.
And the specific mechanism of monetization is worth understanding. Data brokers don't typically sell raw data, they sell predictions. They package profiles into audience segments. "Likely to buy a new car in the next 6 months. Recently searched for diabetes symptoms. In market for a mortgage. Has a child under 5. These segments are what advertisers actually purchase. The broker isn't saying, "Here's John Smith's email and his medical history." They're saying, "Here's a segment of 200,000 people who match your target profile, and we'll serve ads to them."
Let's make this concrete. Give me a real scenario.
You download a fitness app. It asks for location permission so it can map your runs. Reasonable enough. You also have a weather app that checks your location, and you use a shopping app that tracks your purchases. None of these apps know anything particularly sensitive about you in isolation.
Right. The fitness app knows I jog. So what?
But a data broker buys the location feed from all three. They notice that the same device ID shows up at a gym 4 times a week, at a health food store every Saturday, and at a park with running trails every morning. They merge this with purchase data from a loyalty card that's linked to the same email address, and that purchase data shows you've been buying prenatal vitamins.
Oh. So now they know something the fitness app definitely didn't know.
Now they've tagged you as health conscious, likely pregnant, exercises regularly. That's a valuable segment. An insurance company might want to target you with a healthy family plan. A baby products company definitely wants to show you ads. And none of this required anyone to ask you directly whether you're pregnant. They inferred it from fragments that were harmless on their own.
That's the aggregation problem in a nutshell. Harmless fragments become sensitive profiles when you stitch them together.
And the scale is what makes it work economically. Any individual data point is worth almost nothing. But when you have billions of data points across hundreds of millions of people, and you can slice them into precise segments that predict purchasing behavior, the aggregate value is enormous.
Okay, so the data gets collected and stitched together. But that's only half the story. The more interesting question is what Daniel asked. What happens the moment you load a web page? How do the collectors and the buyers actually meet?
This is where it gets fascinating from an engineering perspective. The answer is real-time bidding, or RTB, and ad exchanges. When you load a web page or open an app, before the content even finishes rendering, your device sends out a bid request.
What's in that request?
Your device ID or cookie, your IP address, the URL you're visiting, and, crucially, references to audience segments you've been tagged with, or the actual segment data itself. The ad exchange receives this and broadcasts it to dozens or hundreds of potential advertisers, all of whom have pre-configured campaigns through what are called demand-side platforms.
Demand-side platforms. DSPs. That's the software advertisers use.
Right. The DSP is the advertiser's tool. It connects to the ad exchange and says, "We want to bid on users who match these segments, with this budget, at these times of day." When a bid request comes in, the DSP checks whether the user matches any active campaigns, calculates how much the impression is worth to that advertiser, and submits a bid, all in under 100 milliseconds.
100 milliseconds. That's a tenth of a second.
Often less. A single page load can trigger 50 to 100 separate bid requests across multiple ad exchanges. Each one completes its auction in under 100 milliseconds. The entire thing, from page load to ad served, happens in the time it takes you to blink.
So walk me through a concrete scenario. I open a news app.
You open a news app. The app sends a bid request to an ad exchange. That request contains your device ID and whatever segment tags the app or its data partners have associated with you. Male, 25 to 34, urban, interested in technology, in market for headphones. The ad exchange broadcasts this to, say, 30 advertisers who have campaigns running through their DSPs.
And they all bid simultaneously?
Effectively simultaneously. Each DSP checks its campaigns. A headphone company has a campaign targeting in-market for headphones with a maximum bid of $5 CPM. A car company doesn't care about headphones but has a campaign for urban professionals at $3 CPM. A streaming service is targeting tech interested at $2 CPM. They all submit bids. The highest bid wins. The winning ad gets served. You see it. The whole thing took 80 milliseconds.
And in that 80 milliseconds, my profile was the product being auctioned.
Your attention was the product. Your profile was the description of the product that told buyers what they were bidding on. It's like a commodities market. You don't buy wheat. You buy number 2 hard red winter wheat, delivered Chicago December contract. The profile is the spec sheet.
That distinction matters. The profile isn't the product, it's the label on the product. The product is the opportunity to show you an ad.
And the data broker gets paid for providing that label. Every time a segment they built gets used in a bid request, they collect a fee. The ad exchange takes a cut. The app or website that showed the ad gets paid. There's an entire financial ecosystem built around that 80 millisecond auction.
What does an individual impression actually cost?
It varies enormously. A generic impression, someone with no valuable segments attached, might go for fractions of a cent per thousand impressions. That's your CPM, cost per mil. But a high-value segment can command serious money. Someone actively shopping for a luxury car, tagged as in-market for premium vehicle, household income over $150,000, visited dealership website in last 7 days. That segment might go for $10 to $20 CPM, sometimes more.
So, my attention is worth somewhere between basically nothing and $20 per thousand views, depending on how much the industry thinks I'm about to spend.
And that creates a perverse incentive structure. Because the auction happens in real time and the value of each impression depends on how much data is attached to it, there's a relentless pressure to collect more data points. Every new data point is potential revenue. Every new segment tag makes the impression more valuable. This is why apps track things they have no legitimate use for. A flashlight app doesn't need your location, but your location makes the ad impressions more valuable, so the flashlight app asks for location permission anyway.
The flashlight app is the canonical example of this. It needs access to your camera flash. That's it. But it asks for location, contacts, microphone, and who knows what else.
Because the flashlight app isn't a flashlight business. It's an advertising business that happens to provide a flashlight. The app itself is just the delivery mechanism for the ad auction.
So the entire digital economy is structured around this auction. That's not an exaggeration. It's the business model.
It's the business model for a huge portion of what we use. And here's the opacity problem Daniel's getting at. You never see any of these transactions. There's no receipt, no notification. No way to know what your data sold for, who bought it, or what segments you've been tagged with. The entire market operates in what you could call a regulatory gray zone. GDPR in Europe and CCPA in California have added friction. Companies now have to disclose what they collect and give you some opt-out rights. But the fundamental RTB architecture remains intact.
Because the regulations target collection and consent, not the auction mechanism itself.
Right. GDPR says you need consent to collect data. It doesn't say you can't run real-time auctions, so companies added consent banners and the auctions kept running. The underlying market infrastructure didn't change.
Let's talk about what actually happens to the segments. You mentioned in-market for a car. How does a broker know that?
Multiple signals. You visited car review sites, you searched for best SUVs 2026, you spent time on dealership websites looking at inventory. Your location data shows you visited a car dealership last weekend. Maybe you used a loan calculator on a bank's website. Any one of those is a weak signal. Combined, they're very strong. The broker's model crunches all of it and tags you as in market for vehicle, high purchase intent.
And that tag follows me around the internet.
It follows you into every bid request. Every website you visit, every app you open, the ad exchange sees that tag and offers it to advertisers. Car companies bid on you. Insurance companies bid on you. Extended warranty companies bid on you. You're going to see car ads for the next 3 months, and you're going to wonder how they knew.
They knew because you told them, just not in words.
You told them with your behavior. And the industry has gotten very good at reading behavior.
There's another layer here that's worth pulling at. The data brokers themselves. How many of these firms are there?
Hundreds. The exact number depends on how you count. Some are pure data brokers. Their entire business is collecting and selling data. Others are parts of larger companies. Oracle's data cloud is enormous. Experian has a massive marketing data division separate from its credit reporting business. Axiom has been doing this for decades. Then there are dozens of smaller, specialized firms. One that only does automotive data, one that only does health data, one that focuses on political segments.
And they all feed into the same auction infrastructure.
They all connect to the same DSPs and ad exchanges. The DSP is the integration point. An advertiser using, say, Google's DV360 or the Trade Desk can pull in segments from dozens of different data brokers simultaneously. They might use Axiom for demographic data, Oracle for purchase intent, a specialty firm for automotive, and another for health segments. All in the same campaign, all bidding in the same auctions.
So the advertiser isn't buying from one broker. They're assembling a composite view of you from multiple sources, in real time, during the auction.
The DSP does that assembly automatically. The advertiser just sets their targeting parameters and budget. The DSP handles querying all the data sources, calculating bids, and submitting them to the exchanges. It's a completely automated pipeline from data collection to ad placement.
Which means there's no human in the loop making decisions about your data. It's all algorithms.
All algorithms all the time. Billions of decisions per day, each one made in under 100 milliseconds with no human ever reviewing what segments got applied to whom or whether the inferences were accurate.
That's where the system starts to break in interesting ways. What happens when the segments are wrong?
They're wrong all the time. Probabilistic matching is inherently error-prone. Maybe the model merged two different people who share an IP address. Maybe it tagged you as interested in weight loss because you searched for calorie information for a school project. Maybe it thinks you're pregnant because you bought prenatal vitamins as a gift. The errors compound, and there's no mechanism for correcting them.
Yet those wrong segments still get fed into the auction. Advertisers still bid on them. Money still changes hands.
The system doesn't care about accuracy in any individual case. It cares about statistical correlation at scale. If the likely pregnant segment converts at a slightly higher rate than random targeting, the segment is profitable even if most of the people in it aren't actually pregnant. The errors wash out in the aggregate.
The industry is built on correlations that are good enough to be profitable, but not necessarily accurate for any given person.
That's the whole business. It's predictive modeling at massive scale. The model doesn't need to know you. It needs to know that people who exhibit behaviors similar to yours tend to respond to certain ads. You're a data point in a statistical distribution, not an individual being understood.
Which makes the whole thing feel less personal and more industrial.
It's industrial. It's an industrial-scale information processing system that treats human attention as a raw material to be refined and sold. Which, actually, Hilbert, you've been quiet through all of this. I suspect you have some experience with this world.
Late 90s. Direct mail marketing firm in Cleveland. We were a data broker before anyone used that word.
What did you actually do?
Bought magazine subscription lists. Census data. Warranty cards. Merged them by hand.
By hand?
Index cards. We had a room full of women with index cards matching names and addresses across lists, built what we called affinity segments, sold them to catalog companies. Same thing you're describing, just slower.
The industry predates the internet.
By decades. The only thing that changed is the speed and the granularity. We could tell a catalog company, here's 10,000 people who subscribe to gardening magazines and live in zip codes with above average home values. Took us 6 weeks to compile. Now it takes 80 milliseconds.
That's exactly the point. The fundamental business model hasn't changed. It just got automated.
I'd go further. You two keep saying, you're the product. That's not quite right.
How so?
The industry doesn't think of people as products. They think of people as raw material. The product is the segment, the audience, the prediction. You're not the product. You're the ore being mined.
That's a much less flattering framing.
It's accurate. I spent 3 years compiling lists of people who'd recently lost a spouse. Bereavement lists. We sold them at a premium.
Wait, bereavement lists?
Someone dies, the obituary runs, we pull the surviving spouse's name and address from public records. Add it to the list. Sold it to insurance companies, funeral homes, grief counseling services. Some of them were legitimate. Some were selling commemorative plates.
That's appalling.
It's a market. Markets don't have taste. The bereavement list was one of our most profitable products because the response rates were so high. Grieving people respond to offers. That's just a fact about human behavior. The industry knew it in 1985, and it knows it now.
The digital version of that's probably health-related segments, recently diagnosed with chronic condition. Searching for cancer treatments.
Same principle. Find people in a vulnerable moment, sell access to them. The tools got faster, but the logic didn't change.
You said you compiled these lists for 3 years. What did you do after that?
Moved to a company that did early database marketing. Oracle databases, SQL queries instead of index cards. Then I drove a delivery van for 2 years. Then I wound up here.
The delivery van seems like a sharp left turn.
I wanted to think about something else for a while.
I understand that impulse. But the point you're making about raw material versus product, that reframes the whole discussion. The industry isn't selling you. It's selling predictions about you derived from your behavioral exhaust.
Exhaust is another good word for it. You're not the car. You what comes out of the tailpipe.
Somewhere there's a market for tailpipe emissions.
There's a market for everything if you can measure it. That's the whole history of advertising.
The question that leaves me with, and this is where I think the open question lives, is whether the RTB auction model survives what's coming. GDPR and CCPA added friction but didn't break the architecture, but there's growing pressure. Apple's app tracking transparency framework cut off a lot of iOS data. Google's been talking about deprecating third-party cookies in Chrome for years, though they keep pushing the date back. And now there are AI-specific data regulations being drafted in multiple jurisdictions.
The system might not break, but it might fracture. Instead of one big transparent auction market, you get a bunch of smaller, more opaque systems.
Which would be worse in some ways. At least RTB is documented. Engineers can study how it works. If the market fragments into private deals between platforms and advertisers, walled gardens doing their own targeting with no external visibility, the opacity problem gets worse, not better.
That's the deeper implication. The data broker market isn't a bug in the digital economy. It's the engine. Understanding the auction mechanics is the first step to understanding why the internet looks the way it does. Why every app asks for every permission. Why ads follow you across sites. Why free services exist at all. The whole thing runs on that 80 millisecond auction.
The misconception most people carry around is that data brokers sell your name and email to spammers. That's not the real business. The real business is selling predictive segments to advertisers through automated auctions. Nobody's sitting in a room emailing spreadsheets of contact information. It's all algorithms bidding on your attention in real time.
The next time a page loads in under a second, remember, in that blink, your profile was auctioned off dozens of times.
Thanks to Hilbert Flumentop for producing and for the index card revelation.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Find us at myweirdprompts.com or email the show at show@myweirdprompts.com. We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.